I've shared with you, with a few of you, so my sense of sort of the very different phases that we're in this sort of this disruptive moment in our lives. The first phase that we were in was really just that phase in which we were wrapping our minds around the fact that something out there was no longer out there, but was in fact with us. It is amazing to me to realize that it was on December 31st, 2019, that the World Health Organization put out an alert that there was a new zoonotic virus. That's a virus that moves from the animal world into the human world. That was a novel coronavirus that was now in amongst us. And it had first, probably the first transmission was somewhere in early December. And by December 31st, the World Health Organization was aware of it and they put that word out. And it is now 90 days, only 90 days later. And look at what has happened in those 90 days. And initially, once that went out from the World Health Organization, the daily reports were coming in and we were seeing numbers that were growing, but it was still something that was out there. It was something that was primarily happening in China. And then there was happening in Hong Kong and Singapore and Korea. But for most of us here, where we are, it was out there. And then there was the first case that was reported in Seattle, I think somewhere in mid to late January. And we were getting daily reports on that. But even still, those numbers were in single digits and double digits, and we weren't really that aware. And then we began to see impact in Iran, in Italy, in Spain, and other places. And then the international markets began to get jittery, and then the stock markets began to fluctuate wildly, and the numbers began to grow. And even still 3 weeks ago, many of us were still traveling, a little bit wary, but we were still traveling. And then we get word that there are shelter-in-place orders in San Francisco and other parts of the country. And less than three weeks ago, just 16, 17 days ago, our church council made the decision that we would in fact be shutting our doors. That's just 17 days ago. We had a worship service 3 days later. That was the last time that we would gather together. And here we are 17 days later, and it feels like the world has completely turned upside down in the briefest of moments. And every day now, we recognize that this virus is indeed no longer out there. But it is indeed amongst us. In the United States, there are the most cases of the COVID-19 virus reported in any country in the world. That in the last 3 days in the United States, the death rate has doubled. It went from 1,000 to 2,000 in just 3 days. That here in Hawaii, we saw a 30-person rise just yesterday. That we are seeing this now not being something out there. This is really the end of the first phase, when we come to the recognition that it's not out there, it is here amongst us. And then we enter into a second phase of this time together. And in that second phase is really what we here in Hawaii have been experiencing, this whole sense of being, of sheltering in place. And for some of us, that has even been self-quarantining. Those of us who have been exposed to someone who has been tested and waiting out the results of that test, those of us who have traveled from afar have come home. And we are all having to settle into new rhythms of our day. Some of us are having to get used to technology that we didn't know we'd have to get used to. And look at you, there are 100 different devices that are here using Zoom. And I would gather that of that 100 devices using Zoom, probably about 80 had never even heard of it 3 weeks ago. We're having to figure out how to get meals, whether we can go out and shop for meals, whether we need people to shop for us, trying to figure out how to exercise. When can we go outside to exercise? Can we download videos, 24-hour fitness online? All these different things that we're having to try and figure out. Some of you have had to set up one-room schoolhouses and daycare facilities that you had thought at one point it was outsourced to the public schools, to the private schools. Some have determined that this is a time that you can do something new. Something you've always wanted to do, that all of a sudden you have time to learn a musical instrument, learn another language, finish those scrapbooks, finish those photo albums that you've been working on. One of the things that I know about you all after spending 2.5 years with you as your pastor is that you all are a doing people. If I ask you the question, how are you doing, the title of today's sermon, what you all typically understand how are you doing to be is actually the question of what are you doing? And what are you doing is really about what are you doing to make things better in this world? You are a people that rally and march and demonstrate. You are a people who cook and serve meals. You are a people who advocate and legislate. You are people who green, you plant, you conserve. You are a doing people. And all of a sudden, you who are so used to doing out there are having to try and figure how to do in here, in your home, in your place. And it is an adjustment. It is an adjustment. And this second phase right now is just a phase of settling in to a new and a different rhythm of how we might be. And yet in the middle of that second phase, I have watched as how many of you have settled in so very quickly. And you have immediately gone from caring about making sure that you're okay to now beginning to look out for the other. You're calling one another to check in on each other, offering support, offering prayers. You who are working from home are checking in with your clients to make sure that your clients are able to be supported and get what they need. You have shown me that we are particularly concerned about our kupuna and making sure that their needs are met. Some of you are even downloading patterns for how to make surgical masks, how to make masks that will protect our healthcare workers, and you're sewing them at home. Some of you are working overtime at home to make sure that our systems don't fail, whether that be the systems of our family environments or our churches, our community organizations, or at the city and the state and the federal level. As Cameron Trimble, CEO of the Convergence Project, stated in a recent newsletter, she said, "Today we are being tested in ways many of us have never imagined. And what we are discovering is we are indeed rising to the challenge." She says, "It's hardly been a walk in the park. Some of us are probably exhausted beyond measure because we are showing up for one another in a world of chaos. And yet," she says, "we are discovering that we are stronger than we knew. We are bound to one another through a shared sense of the common good. And that," she says, "is what we understand, what it will take to get us through this. And to observe this and watch it is indeed extraordinary." And to me, the moment that we begin to see us looking out for the common good is the moment that we really enter into the third phase. So if that first phase was just coming to terms with it's out there, it's no longer out there, it's right here amongst us, and the second phase is settling into what does it mean to shelter in place, the third phase is now that I have sheltered myself and I've made sure that I am fine, how do I begin to look out in the common good? And because, and it becomes so very important we do that, because we are having to recognize that there are many who are more impacted by this moment, not just by the threat of the virus, but by the fallout that has come in front, that has come from that. The economic fallout, the loss of jobs, the loss of connectivity with so many people. Because we know that the virus itself is non-discriminatory. It's just looking for a vulnerable host. But the world we live in is in fact quite discriminatory. It is defined by haves and have-nots. It is oriented around privileges that are both seen and unseen. And thus, in fact, the impact is disproportionate, that there are some that are way more vulnerable, way more impacted than others. And in the midst of that, we are seeing stories of the extraordinary shifts that people and organizations are making in order to show up for the common good. Read just yesterday of Tim Boyle. Tim Boyle is the CEO of Columbia Sportswear. Some of you may wear Columbia Sportswear items, particularly if you go out into winter environments at any time. Tim Boyle has voluntarily, as the CEO of Columbia Sportswear, cut his pay to $10,000. And he has taken and he has done that so as to make sure that the pay that he was getting, which was quite significant, is now being redistributed to make sure that all of his retail employees will be able to receive full pay. And his pay didn't cover all that. He just made that as a point to make sure his went down and theirs went up. There are NBA players right now, because the season is over, who are writing checks to cover the salaries of the arena employees who are no longer employed because the arenas have closed down. Carnival Cruise Line has offered its ships and its crew to assist with Navy hospital missions. And whether that is going to be something that's going to be used or not, we don't know. But the fact of the matter is they have taken the extraordinary step to say, if that's what we need, we have ships and we have crew that we can use to help. As I shared last week, there are large manufacturers in the world that are showing up to retool their manufacturing to supply ventilators, masks, and sanitizers. Let me just read this. This is coming, I'm not even sure, from Janet Gilmar. Janet says, I would like to contribute the good news reported in the news about the growing number initiative to support the supply of critically needed COVID-19 infection protection equipment. Local builders are contributing N95 masks. A local dentist, the UH Theater Costume Department, Iolani, Midpack, using their equipment and expertise. Ford is partnering with GM and GE to produce ventilators and air purifiers. The fact of the matter is that we are indeed seeing organizations and individuals step up for the common good. Right here in Hawaii, our supermarkets are making sure that there's a kupuna shopping hour to make sure that our kupuna are able to get in and shop when it is safest to be there. Right here in Hawaii, there's a bank that is covering half the cost of takeout and delivery food if you are able to shop from certain restaurants that they are supporting there. And because we are a doing people, you Church of the Crossroads members are a doing people, this is a phase that many of you are looking for already where you can contribute. So Fu's announcement in the very beginning about Malama Meals, that if you are a person that is not in a compromised setting and are able to get out there creating opportunities for you to be able to get out and to begin to deliver meals where there's the greatest need. And we know that there will be other opportunities will come forward. And Fu has stepped up to help us to coordinate the dissemination of that information of how we can be involved as we enter into this phase in which we look beyond our needs and look to the common good. It may be other ways that we do it. Right now, as I said, PUM and finance committees are going to meet this afternoon. Part of what they are meeting this afternoon is we need to look at the fact that our income is going to be shrinking right now because our renters, those who use our facilities, are also shut down. And so there are some amongst us that have dug into the 894 pages of the $2 trillion CARES Act that just got passed this week, and looking for the places where nonprofits like churches are able to take advantage of low interest loans. And it's not just how it impacts us, but our tenants as well. And there are some amongst you that are using your contacts out there in the world to create new supply chains, to be able to bring in masks and other things right there. On a daily basis, I hear from members of this congregation, things that people are doing to make sure that we are not just sitting in place, but we are actually looking out to the needs of the common good, and particularly those who are most vulnerable and those impacted. And this moment affords us opportunities that we had not anticipated to live out the gospel ways in ways unimagined just a few weeks ago, particularly because the ways we would typically attack a problem are no longer the ways that we can do it. Because again, as a people who are doers, what you're used to is there's a problem, you open the door, you go and confront the problem head on, you put your shoulder into it, and you apply your sheer force of will to make things better. Hard to open the door when you're sheltered in place. Hard to put your shoulder into something when you are indeed sheltered in place. And so you are having to turn on other muscles, turn on other ways of thinking, and having to be creative and inspired. And I want to concentrate on that one word for just a minute, inspired. The Latin, it comes from the Latin, in spiritus. Inspiration is that moment when the spirit speaks into us. When you have that creative bolt that you say, where did that thought come from? It is the Spirit speaking into that moment and allowing us to be creative and to be inspired to do things differently. It is an opening up of ourselves to the movement of the Spirit of our lives. And this may be the most important thing that happens in the third phase. And this may be the most important thing that you hear right now, because this is a moment as we look out for the common good. We can't just look out for the common good in the ways of we have always done. In fact, we need to allow ourselves to be opened up to new ways. If we are going to be inspired in spiritus, then in this new moment, where there may be new space created in our lives, new rhythms created in our lives, it is time to develop some new spiritual muscles. Or if we already have those spiritual muscles, to lean into those spiritual muscles, because all of a sudden, for many of you, there is space to pray, space to center, space to meditate, to contemplate, to vibrate, to do whatever you need to do to open yourself to the reality that God is indeed present, and that God is indeed speaking, and that God is indeed calling us, and God is indeed calling us to something new. This is perhaps the most valuable gift that is given to us, the most unexpected gift that is given to us by the fact that we are now called to shelter in place. And for the most part, the rhythms of our life have changed. And into that rhythm, we are able to do things we may not have given ourselves time to do before. To center in on that word of God, the presence of God in our lives, because there will be a phase four. And that phase four is that when this virus is passed, we get to determine what we will do, how we will be in this new moment, what will be our new normal, what will be our new normal. Perhaps this is the moment, and many of us are in it right now, when we come to realize that the very best action, the very best doing that we can do, the very best expression of our outward journey in life springs forth from that deep well of our inner journey. Contemplative action is going to arise from contemplative rest. The rhythms of a new life that you are being offered at this time in a new way of being give you the opportunity to go deep within yourself, to listen deeply for the presence of God, knowing that God will call you into indeed something new. People that we know and admire, people like Tracy Blackman, who was our Wattada lecturer of 2018, a woman who is so active working for justice in the world, begins every day with 2 hours of prayer and meditation. Mahatma Gandhi, perhaps one of the most actively present people the world has ever seen, began every day with 3 to 4 hours of meditation. If we want to be the people who are going to create a new normal when this moment has passed, the best thing that we can be doing is, if the time has been given to us in a new rhythm of life, to be able to contemplate, to be able to pray, to be able to center on the word, then that is perhaps the wisest thing that we can do. For it is in there that we will find the well that will lead us to the action that will take us to a new way. This is our time, a gift really, to seek for, to knock for, to ask for how we might truly live into the kingdom of God when this disruptive moment has passed. For here's the truth. There are two truths which have become glaringly clear to me in the last week or so. Number one. When this virus has passed, this is not the last virus we shall see. This is not the last time. And number two, the structures of our society have exacerbated the impact of this virus. And if we do not change those structures, we will see this moment again, and it could be worse the next time. Let me put some broad strokes on that for just a minute. What we know right now is our consumptive, even addictive habits have wreaked havoc on the community of God's creation. Most of us sitting in on this call are fully aware of climate change and the impact that our actions have had to change the climate, and what that climate changing is going to, how it's impacting all of our lives, and we'll do so more and more and more if we don't do something about it. That's a result of our consumptive habits. But this is not about climate change, because what we don't think about is that those consumptive, almost addictive habits also deal with habitat destruction. Sonia Schock, author of Pandemic, Tracking Contagion from Cholera to Ebola and Beyond, talk about some bedtime reading, says the following: for decades, we have sated our outsized appetites. Read that as not just human appetite for food, but appetite for stuff in general, by encroaching on an ever-expanding swath of the planet with our industrial activities. Think extraction for not just fossil fuels and things like that, but those precious metals that are found in things like this that we are communicating with right now. We have created this ever-expanding swath of the planet with our industrial activities, causing destruction, rainforest loss, coral reef loss, and most importantly, forcing wild species to cram into remaining fragments of habitat in closer proximity to ours. That's what it's about. Animal microbes, such as that which is at the root of the COVID-19, and not to mention hundreds of others from Ebola to Zika, to cross over into human bodies, causing epidemics and pandemics. The scary conclusion from that is that the disharmony that we have engineered with the rest of the community of God's creation, with our kin of the kingdom, has created the conditions for more viruses like this. That's why that first truth, that this is not the last one that we are going to see. If nothing changes, this will not be the last one. And add to this fact that we have structured our economic reality in such a way that we have forced the most vulnerable amongst us into making choices that run against the common good. For far too many people, the lack of a living wage, the need to work multiple jobs in order to care for their family, the lack of affordable health care or any health care, the lack of sick leave, and so much more has forced people into going to work when they're sick, going into the public when they should be home and self-quarantine, or seeking work that puts themselves and their families at risk. We could have another discussion about the ways in which decision makers have responded to the crisis, but that's another time. Truth is, what has been our normal, what has developed when we talk about life that is normal, has left us vulnerable, has left us without the resiliency needed in disruptive moments like this. But guess what? There is no more. The normal is no more. We get to create a new normal. When we get through this moment and we enter into that phase four of life that is after this moment of self-sheltering and everything else, we get to create a new normal. So in this moment, before we get there, we get to not just contemplate, and I mean that in the most prayerful sense. This is a moment to open ourselves up to the love and guidance of God, absolutely. We get to not just contemplate, but perhaps begin to put into place the shifts that are necessary to create a new normal that is a more just, more compassionate, more loving normal. What if we could be working in this moment while we await the end of this disruption to ensure that going forward, no one is without access to healthcare. So that if something like this comes along, they can get tested and if needed, could get the care that they need. What if we make sure that everyone is indeed paid a fair wage, which includes benefits for sick leave, so that no one is putting their health and our health at risk by having to work extra jobs, or if it were to happen that they got sick, they could step away and know that their job would be there when they came back. This is not impossible. This is an imperative, because what we have learned in this crisis moment is that indeed we are all better when our focus is on meeting the needs of the whole rather than meeting the desires of the individual. We see that time and time again. So this is our moment to not say what if, but to indeed create that new normal. What if we could be working in this moment to ensure that going forward, we truly take into consideration the impacts of our actions on the whole of God's creation? What if we asked our technology gurus to move away from the planned obsolescence of these devices? They plan for us to need a new one every year and a half. What if instead we ask our technology gurus to build in resilience? So thus we eliminate the need for more and more extraction of fine and precious minerals, and thus less destruction of habitat, and thus lessening the possibility of the passing of one of an animal virus to the human community. What if we determine that we ourselves can in fact continue to burn less carbon, to travel less, to drive less? What if that means that maybe we don't get to do everything on our bucket list? I can tell you I desperately want to. The place I want to go to more than anywhere else in the world is Machu Picchu. That's where I want to go. I would love to burn the carbon to get myself the Machu Picchu. But what if one of the lessons that is learned from right now is, you know what? I may not get there. And it's okay. I live in Hawaii. That's not a bad deal to spend the rest of my life living on these beautiful and wonderful shores with beautiful and wonderful people like you all. What if indeed we look at the community of the creation and we say, is it possible that we can find work for people that requires less carbon, that in fact allows us to put people working on the land in such a way that we are growing food for one another and caring for one another rather than the service industry jobs that we have become so dependent upon? What if what we have learned is that we are indeed best when we focus on the common good? We are even better when we focus on the entirety of the community of God's creation that we are privileged to be a part of. What if, as Eric Kleinberg, a professor of sociology at NYU, says, this disruptive moment of a virus forces us to reconsider who we are and what we value, and in the long run, it could help us rediscover the better versions of ourselves. Pipe dream. Pipe dream. I can hear it right now as I say that. People are saying these are pipe dreams. We're going to return to the way things have been. You are saying these are pipe dreams. You can hear strains of John Lennon singing, imagine all the people living for today. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. No, in fact, I would argue that Jesus is talking about just such a dream throughout the entire Sermon on the Mount. From the Beatitudes in chapter 5 that call us to mature and ripen into our very best selves, from the metaphors of salt and light calling us to be transformative agents of love in our world, from the call to embody love even for our enemies, to not look out just for ourselves, but to go the extra mile, to give the shirt off our back, to the Lord's Prayer, learning how to pray in a way that aligns you with God's very essence and God's call. These are all the things that are in the Sermon on the Mount that we've been looking at these last number of weeks, to seeking it, asking for a life in which God and God's way of love and compassion, joy and justice are our ways. 2,000 years ago, preaching from a mountaintop, surveying a world dominated by the sheer force of the Roman Empire and its self-serving acolytes of the power elites in Jerusalem at the time, or the tiny, wealthy, and powerful few of the empire that were determining the lives of the many, Jesus challenges those who would listen when he preaches that Sermon on the Mount to build a better world. To build a world whose foundation is not the shifting sands of ego, desire, and self, the relentless pursuit of power and possessions and position. That world is like a wolf in sheep's clothing that he talks about. The old normal that so many of our decision makers want us to return to as quickly as possible. A world that has set us up for a disruptive moment. Instead, Jesus calls us to build a world that is built on not those shifting sands, but on the solid rock of God's love and the pursuit of a life that expresses that love. In these days, in these weeks, perhaps in the very months that it could be ahead of us, when the shape of our days shifts and we have more time to center on God's call, I am hopeful that this is the moment that we decide that we can co-create with God a new, better normal, a new, better normal going forward. I'm going to leave you with one image. Chris, could you pull up that tree trunk for me? So I just want you to look at this picture. It right now looks like a stump. It's actually a neighborhood walk that I was on. And that stump that you're looking at was a tree that was cut down and laid on its side and cut into a 3-foot piece. And it's been laying there for a while. And if you look down at the bottom of the trunk and you see a leaf off to the left of it, and just to the right of that leaf, you'll see a little bit of a shoot. There's an arrow pointing at it right now. That is a dead tree trunk from which there is new life that is emerging. And up at the top of that trunk as well, if we can go up that, you can barely see it, right there is another shoot that is coming out. From out of this moment of what everyone would say is terrible, disruptive, awful, tree has died, new life is emerging. Something new is being formed. This is the moment, Chris, thank you, that's great. This is indeed the moment that we are being called to. in which we get to be like that shoot coming out from that trunk and create something new, a new normal, a new way of life, a new way of being. Let us indeed take that moment amongst us. Amen.